Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Kent Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my coverage from AWE 2026 and talking to a number of different small businesses there, today's episode is with Patrick Ascalise. So Patrick was with Dark Arts, and so he's got an application that he was showing both last year and this year called Trip to Light, which is actually more of a game. It's a dancing game where you're able to dance with a partner. And so I actually had a chance to try this out about a week or so ahead of Augmented World Expo, where I went up to Seattle XR to give a whole talk on the blending of the elements of experiential design. And so I had a chance to meet him and actually try out the demo. And so I didn't get a chance to actually do this interview at AWE, but followed up with him afterwards just because we didn't get a chance to meet up while we're there. It's such a chaotic time, and I typically don't like to keep much of a schedule while I'm there. And so I just kind of use based upon who I normally run into or collide with to be able to do a broader coverage of the deeper themes that I'm tracking while I'm there. But I wanted to follow up with Patrick just because it did seem like the overall gaming was on a bit of a downswing from a lot of the different people that I talked to who are more from gaming companies. It seemed like they were a bit scrapping, trying to drum up work. And so gaming is something that the broader gaming industry is like facing all these different challenges. And so I think that's also a bit of a microcosm for what's also happening within the XR industry for gaming. And so it was interesting to talk to Patrick, not only about his game and what he's doing, but all these other kind of side gigs and other approaches that he's kind of throwing a bunch of spaghetti against the wall to try to find how to diversify the portfolio of all the different types of projects that they're working there to go beyond just like, you know, putting all your eggs in one basket of gaming, because if you are doing that, then it's a bit of a hit or miss type of situation. And so trying to find a momentum of many other different types of things that are happening with the broader XR industry. So that was one of the things that I was really interested in kind of digging into and getting a bit of a sense of like what's happening in the XR industry and how people are kind of navigating the kind of headwinds of all the different times of being in this liminal space of things ending and new things beginning and where things are headed here in the future. So covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Patrick happened on Thursday, June 23rd, 2026. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Hello, my name is Patrick Ascalise, and I am the founder of Dark Arts Software. Primarily, we are an entertainment and gaming-focused software company, but we also have general XR technology chops under our and experience under our belts as well. So our flagship game, Trip the Light, is a virtual dance game and simulator with a unique feature primarily being around being able to dance hand in hand with a virtual partner. And we can, you know, teach you the basics of dances like salsa. We'll be adding others like swing. And, you know, and then we have sort of more traditional dance video game modes we call Rhythm Challenge, where you're mirroring your virtual partner and, you know, doing hip hop and pop. And we're bringing in K-pop soon, as well as like straight teaching mode, like Salsa 101, we call it, where we take you through all the basics. Yeah. So that's our current main offering. It's out in the Meta Quest store in early access and has been since November. The game was the awarded Best in Show Gaming last year at AWE, and this year was a finalist for the Best Consumer App category. So it's been an exciting ride. It's a really interesting, difficult, unique challenge. That's our primary offering right now.
Great. And maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
Yeah, sure. So I've been in the broader gaming and immersive 3D industry my entire career, so about 25 years. I started in Microsoft and the Xbox division and gaming division in the early 2000s and had the privilege to work on a ton of PC games and other neat pieces of technology. But really, I think where things really started for me was I was one of the very first people to work on the Microsoft Kinect camera when it was still just sort of a backroom science project, but that had proven itself. It was part of the team that took that and actually brought it to market when there was really only about a dozen people at the company that knew about it. So worked on that project for a while. Left Microsoft, started a video game company called Camouflage with another Microsoft gaming person, that was the company that ultimately went on to do the Iron Man VR on the PlayStation. And then, I exited before, but then went on to do the Batman Arkham project that comes with the Quest 3S. So, and I was there for, building our flagship product, a game called Republic. It was a sort of stealth iPhone 4 AAA kind of quality game. So we were trying to move the needle forward there in like handheld gaming. That was one of our big pushes. And then in the interim, I've done a ton of other stuff, both XR and non-XR, but mostly XR. So when I left Camouflage, I have done a number of things, including working at Vulcan, which was the company founded by Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen, and worked on XR and VR experiences for live football games. We would wear XR headsets to Seahawks games. We had full access to the stadium to develop, these sort of future experiences that people could potentially have one day when glasses are ubiquitous. And on top of that, the other big project there, he really wanted a headsetless VR system. So he built the closest thing to a holodeck that's been created, somewhat similar to a VR cave, in that, it's projecting onto the walls. This is actually it here. I don't know if you can see it or not very well, but joined that project and, made it interactive. I led interactivity for it and led design of retooling there. It was also a video player, so it played a lot of like super high-end 360 video that Vulcan had created, including Seahawks and Justin Timberlake and some other customized videos that we had made for it. And it took it from like a four giant $10,000 server system down to one machine running a video player that we actually made work in Unity. And then turn the thing Turned it on, built a whole bunch of game demos, go-kart simulators, shooters, built a custom HTC Vive controller for it, which is actually this thing.
It's
And
like a little
then,
mini gun.
yeah, so you put the tracker on here, right? And so did all the calibration for how you make it feel like it's aiming where you're looking. Basically figured out how to make the thing interactive, help do the integration on the sensors and design the runtime and all that. And then we built a zombie shooter that we called Dome of the Dead that was available to the public here at with the MoPOP Museum, formerly known as the EMP, as well as after Paul passed away and the project was sold, after the pandemic, the company that bought it, updated the game for them under the Dark Arts brand, helped them open up their location in Canada, where they do location-based entertainment. Aside from that, I worked on the Microsoft HoloLens. I have worked on the Orion project at Meta, and have just shipped a whole bunch of other XR apps and games, and on Gear VR, work stuff for the Vive, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, so I mean, both platform and content, right? So help do hardware design for peripherals and for devices, as well as, straight game design for things like Trip the Light, Dome of the Dead, and a handful of others. Yeah, and that was like 25 years kind of compressed down into, but ever since sort of the VR resurrection revolution around the DK1, I've been almost 100% back in XR, and have done a ton of user research on kind of same things you would do at some of the bigger platform companies, right? So at Vulcan, we were sort of building our own holodeck. It was like a parallel XR platform. Did a lot of that same kind of research on how do you deal with comfort, right? How do you make people not feel sick? What are the sort of rules on locomotion? All kinds of things. Yeah, anyway, so big companies, Microsoft, Meta, Vulcan, and also a handful of startups, including like I've even worked on like a VR glove for a company. So I've done a lot of trade shows, right, where I've been hired, or Dark Arts has been hired to build somebody's like sort of high-end demo and help them get their software like up to snuff so that they can start to show stuff off. So CES, I've done CES, GDC, E3, TED, the one up in Vancouver. Yeah, lots and lots and lots of XR and immersive and just hardcore software stuff. Done a lot of high performance, you know, push the processors and the magical pieces of the chips as hard as they can go. So, yeah.
Nice. Awesome. Well, thanks for that 25-year recap of your whole journey into XR.
I probably forgot something. That's okay. We don't need to, I don't need to bombard you.
Well, maybe could you give a bit more context for where did Trip the Light begin? So this whole kind of partner dance within yep. VR, give me a bit about that, a bit more context for that origin story.
Absolutely. So, you know, I was fortunate to have exited from Camouflage after the Iron Man deal happened. And I had already created the Dark Arts brand and had been under it for a while, but it was primarily just consulting. And I knew I wanted to build a VR or AR. At the time, we were still, you know, only black and white pass-through or... So I was really looking at VR. I knew I was going to build something, and I had a handful of game ideas, and I was in the position where I could start to do it. And my wife and I were actually at her cousin's wedding in South Carolina, and we were on the dance floor. You know, we've done salsa and swing and all these things over the years. And, you know, I'm a musical person, and we were just on the dance floor at the wedding, and a lightning bolt struck, and that's where it came from. And I paused all the other ideas. And I've been doing that for over 3 years at this point.
So what is it about partner dance in terms of, because, you know, obviously there's rhythm games like Beat mm-hmm. Saber where you're just a solo person, but this is unique in the sense that you're kind of dancing with a virtual partner and trying yeah. to teach the steps for these partner dances. And so, yeah, well, like maybe take a step back and tell me a bit about how you first started getting into the partner dance. And then, you know, what your first steps were to try to translate this into VR.
Sure. So, I mean, originally, just as, you know, like years ago, my wife and I danced at our wedding. So we did lessons and then over the years for fun. And, you know, we would go do salsa and things like that. I think part of it was I knew I wanted to do something that was really only possible in VR. I've always been like a platform pusher type person, right? Between like the Kinect and phone games that were early, things like that. And so all of my ideas were centered around, you know, I'm not just trying to bring a flat experience in and what could I do that's different, that only could be done in VR. And I think it's just serendipitous that over the course of my career, I think the project might have seemed overwhelming to a lot of folks, right? There's a lot of specific, specialized experience that goes into building a dynamically animated avatar, right, that looks realistic and behaves in a way that is believable. So we're dancing, it hits me, I tell my father-in-law and other people that this is what it's going to be, and I knew I could pull it off because of I have this extensive experience with doing like runtime real-time dynamic humanoid character animation. I've been doing it long enough to know that I could hit the visual bar that I wanted, and I just thought somebody's gonna do this and I want it to be me, right? And I think that that's been borne out. There's a probably four or five other partner dancing salsa type experiences available in the market today of varying levels of like depth, right? And I think there's something to be taken away from all of them, right? There, but I feel like I haven't seen very many where the team clearly has the dance background or experience and the technical engineering and design side together. There's a handful, but there are a few out there that are excellent in that they're. You could tell that they're being led by professional dancers, but then they don't quite have that magical moment when it's time to go hand in hand with your partner. Some don't have it at all. And then on the flip side, there's a few that have like excellent technical implementation, but you can tell that it feels engineer led and potentially not dancer. There's maybe some dancer consultants on the team, right? So I know I just went a little away from your question, but like, I always wanted to do something unique and special for all the platforms I've worked on. And I feel like this one, just more than any other in my career and most of my projects haven't been rhythm games. I've worked on a few here and there, but I just knew. Yeah, and I was really secretive about it for a while because I was worried about other companies picking it up that had deeper pockets. And yeah, so that's the story, Kent. Does that help?
Yeah, nice. Yeah, for sure. And I had a chance to play the demo at Seattle XR a couple of weeks ago, and then we were just at Augmented World Expo. And so maybe you could just give a bit more context for, you were at AWE last year, and then you're there again this year. AWE is sort of like a an interesting hybrid. They're calling it the Festival of Festivals, where they have like a gaming hub, but it's I'd say mostly like the wider XR industry within a lot of other sort of things that are being shown. Posters and Arts Festival was new this year. Gaming Hub, I think, was new last year. And so,
That's
yeah,
correct.
just curious to hear what your experience was coming to like an XR industry event like AWE last year and then this year, and then what kind of what type of stuff you were getting out of that type of exhibiting there at AWE.
In fact, we were even there the year before. So our first AWE was 2024, and we were in the playground area that year, and it was shockingly positive. Like it was wildly positive, and we were very closed about it. So my experience with AWE has been fantastic. And I think for me, because I have a broader, I'm not just about gaming, right? Having worked on all these other XR projects, while it is one of my core passions, what I think I like about AWE is that everyone's into AR, VR, XR, and everyone wants to see what everyone's doing. Anyway, so the first year, 2 years ago, 2024, I remember a bunch of people that I knew came and played it, and some new folks I hadn't played it before yet either. I'd never played it. We weren't showing any visuals. We didn't want anyone to see what was actually happening when you put the headset on. And I remember that same evening, one of the evenings, a friend named Sarah Hill was on Charlie Fink's podcast. It was running in late to speak because she had just come from our booth. And was like, you have to check this thing out. So it was that was pretty neat. And that kind of really was AWE is where I knew we had something. AWE 2024. I think, what I feel from having worked with them, I've actually been to both AWE Asia and AWE Europe as well with the game since that first one. I feel I've always felt like there was a little bit of a help it kind of spice it up a little bit, make it kind of fun, right? Because it is an industry event. There's a lot of under the hood tech. There's people grinding lenses and with different enterprise solutions or a manufacturer of a part or a headset. And so I was glad to see them bring in the gaming hub. And last year, right, one of the biggest things for us was winning the inaugural, as best in show for gaming hub since you handed us our Augie. I have found it to be exceptionally helpful as we grow and want to really have a presence in the XR industry as a whole, because I've always wanted Dark Arts to be bigger than just being known as like a gaming company, right? It's Dark Arts software for a reason and not Dark Arts Games or Dark Arts Game Studio, because we have other things to offer. And this year we started to bring some of those things out into the front a little bit more. So we, among other things, right, we've been developing our own mixed reality capture tools for the past year or so, and we use them to do all of our marketing videos. We do real-time mixed reality capture while people are playing the game, where you can see the hand-in-hand interaction in real time of your dance partner and the person that's playing. A lot of this has come from just me having been in the software field for a while and sort of struggling with the tools that are available and having a team and just enough experience to say, you know what, I think we can do this better than some of the things that are available and potentially productize some of them to the broader XR industry as well. So among other things, right, this year we also introduced some of our proprietary rendering tech. We can make you feel like you're in a comic book or make you feel like you're in a cartoon, in a way that is sort of lost when you play other XR games that are in that style. There's a certain kind of technique to the way the comics and cartoons are painted because of the nature of the fact that they come through a rectangle that you see through, right? And because of the stereoscopic vision, right, and some of these other challenges with having two eyes, it's hard to not feel, it's hard to immerse a player in a world that feels like a painting or a drawing in a headset, where it's easy on a 2D screen. So we've built some tech there. We had that demo this year at AWE, where we show you a comic book, and then on, you know, on the next page, some of the cells notice you and they're animated, and then we close the entire book on you and bring you in to that world. I don't know if you had a chance to. Oh, you haven't had a chance to play it yet.
Which one?
So, the comic.
I did the Trip the Light, but I don't know what right. else. What experience are you talking about?
So we at AWE, we showed off for the first time ever our custom rendering tools for that allow us to, among other things, have players feel fully immersed in a drawing style environment that's still real time in 3D. If you play, without naming any names, if you play any of the sort of modern comic book games that are available today, you'll notice things like those sort of comic book black colors that are in the edges are painted into the 3D objects. Whereas on a 2D screen or on an actual comic book, right, those are done in the final image that you're seeing that is a rectangle. So there's sort of these stylizations that you can do on a console game or a PC game that have not been achieved yet in a really believable way in VR. And that's one of the things we were showing off. So if you wanted to do an anime style game or a comic book style game or just a straight cartoon style game, but have the assets still be full 3D, we can really push you into feeling like, wow, this looks like it's drawn. And it's not a, like I said, not like the magic of the comic book style rendering or anime style rendering isn't painted into the 3D assets themselves, which is what you see in VR games. That same technology, as we were developing it, we realized that it has some possibility to, that it had the possibility to make your VR experience, if you have vergence issues with your eyes, so if you're nearsighted or farsighted within a certain range, that we have the ability to correct some of that directly in the projection that we deliver to your eyes. So as we were developing this comic book render, we realized that we proved out our image, our vision correction technology, and patented that as well. So we showed that off at AWE as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, one of the things I wanted to ask is that a big question I was asking everyone at AWE is like, what the heck is happening with this industry right now in terms of there are things that feels like a bit of a liminal time. Things are ending. New things are beginning. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to get a sense of how, what your sense of what the story is for right now in XR and how you're navigating it all.
Yeah. So the right now for me is that it is a moment of transition, but I, you know, and I see a really big growth in, and people are, there's real ROI on things like simulations that are happening right now. People are saving money by pre-training in VR. And the truth is that, you know, games, especially new IPs, it's always hard, right? So as we continue to grow Trip the Light, which is our core passion project, you know, and passion project is the wrong word. It's our core. I believe so strongly in it, right? And so does most of the people I feel that have been around, that being able to offer a lot of our learnings to and our experience to the industry more broadly is good for everybody, whether or not it's gaming or enterprise, B2B. So I'm hopeful that, you know, Meta will come around with another interesting gaming capable headset. I'm glad to see Valve in the mix. I'm glad for the Pico offerings. But I think in the short term and in the long term overall, like I expect that XR as a whole, I've always kind of thought this, that the big value is usually in the B2B for most of the market, right? And we have a little ways to go to sort of hit like those PC and console gaming level numbers that people are looking for, right? For me, one of the challenges really is the proof is in the pudding, and it's hard to get people who've never done VR to do VR. It's also hard to market directly to the people that can buy the thing. So I'm hoping for some growth there. I'm hoping for some of the newer platforms to be able to help solve some of those challenges. But yeah, I mean, I'm not any less bullish than I have been before. In the long run, there's ups and downs.
Definitely seems like that the hottest new projects that were on the floor were all mostly smart glasses or AR glasses, mixed reality glasses, so more of a glasses form factor, especially with like the Xreal Aura that seemed to be people who were taking their Android APKs and being able to put it on to Android XR and have that different type of form factor, which is more glasses based. So I'm just curious. I know that in Seattle XR, you were showing me a little bit of like mixed reality features. And if you're looking at something like Triplelight to also be compatible with some of this, new generation of mixed reality and AR glasses.
Yeah, I think as the devices continue to, be more powerful and comfortable, it's absolutely a place we'd like to go. I believe that the pass-through in these VR headsets is very important for pushing, the development and the research on what glasses will be able to do, right? Having worked on the HoloLens and understanding some of the complexities of like the actual see-through lens technology, I think fully immersive, like not fully immersive is the wrong word, maybe having your dance partner with you that you can go hand in hand with, might be a little ways off, but I think we're going to get there. And I do think there's a, just like I think everybody else in the field, I do think that the glasses are the big game changer for the whole way that we interact with computers, right? I'm glad to see the AI revolution take off for that, because I do, as you like, AI glasses as we're calling them, right? The problem space to solve the general computer vision challenges of being able to wear glasses all day is so enormous that I don't believe you could ever put like the top 15 smartest people in the world in a room and lock them up for 2 years and have them come out with some general purpose. You can wear them down the street, you can wear them at the grocery store and have it help you and be useful in a meaningful way. So that I think is all the right direction. Yeah, does that, I mean, for us specifically, we are very interested in, from on an because of our experience with AR, right? Potentially aiding companies that are looking to build apps or infrastructure around usability and things like that for their smart glasses.
Yeah, and I know that Ori Inbar in his opening keynote, he was showing a number of different places where he saw that there were like growth. One were like location-based entertainment, LBE, but also immersive video, so Apple Vision Pro and training simulation, DoD. There's a number of different sectors, and one of the things that wasn't listed was gaming, which it feels like the whole gaming industry is in a bit of a flux right now, and so just trying to get a sense of how Dark Arts is navigating this sort of liminal time when it comes to both gaming and XR and the wider gaming industry in general.
Yeah, so a place we are pursuing is LBE, right? Because we have some LBE experience, particularly with the holodeck. I've done a lot of the big XR LBE, sorry, LBE projects that are out there and available. Like I think, Interstellar Arc is absolutely fantastic. I've done most of the sandbox experiences. And LBE is a place that's growing, and it's a place that we are highly interested in. I think there's some special kinds of experiences, particularly around gaming, that you won't really ever be able to do in your home, even if you had multiple headsets, even with all of the technology for anchoring and all that, that LBE can really enable. So, and I agree, the gaming itself seems to not be growing as much as we would all kind of like across the board, not just in XR. So I think the other thing you mentioned was L&D kind of simulations, right? So that's an area that I have been, we're also interested in pursuing because of some of the high-end simulations that we've built, and both for like mobile XR and for, desktop PC driven XR projects. One of the, I keep hearing stories about, this company has started training their employees on, they have a high turnover factory assembly line or warehouse where they don't have, it takes a while to train people up. There's a lot of mistakes that are made and a lot of loss that happens in, the first, the short amount of time that they're there and the, a good percentage of it. So there's been some stories about, I think it was like Wrigley Gum, for example, had was losing millions of dollars a year in like lost product, right? Because it takes people a certain amount of time to not like drop the gum or as it's going by, and have effectively wiped that loss out by pre-training everyone. I've heard that Walmart's training everyone in XR now, and I think we've crossed the threshold where you don't necessarily need a custom, XR headset system to be able to do it. It can be, and I think eventually we'll maybe not even that far off. One of the things we're interested in is helping people build sort of like platform and device agnostic simulation systems so that they could construct their specific training, right, and learning environment in a way that could be like reused or sort of put together like puzzle pieces. And I think another area that, does that make sense? Like,
Yeah.
yeah, it, I think another area that I think we could see some potential opportunity is in, like humanoid or robotics, virtual robotics training, right? So we've done a bunch of work on, training our humanoid dancers to dance with you in a, some custom machine learning models that we had developed. We're able to cut some corners because we don't want them to ever fall over, and it's always virtual, right? But those, a lot of those same kind of techniques could be useful in, saving a lot of both cost in terms of like damaged devices, properly simulating robotics in VR or AR, and as well as, sort of teaching people how to interact with potentially dangerous robotics by simulating them in an augmented reality environment. So these are some of the areas that we're really looking at potentially being able to help out some enterprises. Yeah,
Nice.
I mean, I see it. L&D is a big thing. Enterprise is a big thing right now. Gaming is cool, is cooling, but I think it'll come back.
Nice. Well, with Trip the Light, you mentioned that it was in early access. What's next for Dark Arts and Trip the Light?
Yes, yeah, so we are bringing the game to the Pico. That was an announcement that we made at AWE. We will have an update in the summer where we introduce some new songs. We have a K-pop routine coming, new dance partner, and we do plan to add on other dance styles, like I mentioned. So we have swing coming down the pipeline as well. We also have a flat version, flat screen version of it that we were showing off at AWE that we don't have a release plan yet. But we are working with a company called Visi. They used to be called Viziverse, Visi, to who offers a they translate the VR input set into via camera, right? Very similar to how like the Microsoft Kinect and other cameras used to work, but all color, all AI. And so we had a 2D version of the game running there. So we want to bring that out as well at some point. And I think later this year we will, and I haven't decided quite yet when we're going to tie the timing in with the Pico and other things we are going to do, but we will exit early access this year and bring out the full 1.0 version of the product, which will include things like a season's pass and that content could either be purchased through season's pass or as it rolls out. Yeah.
Nice. As I go through this conversation with you, I'm really struck with like how many irons in the fire you have to have as a sort of scrappy independent XR development shop trying to
Yeah.
find all the different possible spaces of things where you could find some momentum, especially as we're all trying to figure out what the heck's going on. So it sounds
Yeah.
like you have to, and going to places like AW, I'm sure that you're able to make those different types of, let's say, like enterprise connections that you may not be exposed to if you're just in the gaming realm. Correct. Of folks. Yep. And just working with the consumers. So yeah, just any other reflections on, you know, things that you, all these other things, if there's anything we haven't mentioned that you also are working on in terms of stuff that could potentially have traction to, you know, keep Dark Arts afloat.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing right now is what I mentioned. You know, we're starting to show off the things that we've built. We're highly interested in supporting other XR, the XR industry as a whole, in any way that we can, because we're so experienced in it and we're fortunate to have a large enough team to continue to push Trip the Light forward, right, as we take on these other projects. I'm trying to think if there was anything else. I am excited to see growth in general. Like, I'm really excited to see the growth of LBE. I have always been a big proponent there. I really like the idea of like playing with my friends in real space. So I'm glad to see that. I'm glad to see companies like Sandbox and Interstellar are growing. I'm glad to see Samsung coming in with these, you know, with headsets, and seeing Google really hit into the market as well, because, you know, the having that more generalized OS like we have for our phones, I think really, really matters, especially as we have a variety of different kinds of XR devices. Yeah, really. I mean, we're just pushing. You know what I mean? We don't want to stop playing this game because we really like this game. And I love XR and I love, you know, gaming and having built so many things that weren't just gaming, right? You know, for example, have like developed, when I still worked at Vulcan, right, besides the gaming we did, we developed like a Starbucks that hadn't been built yet, right? Things like that. There's a gap that I know it's shrinking. I know companies are solving between, you know, the way like architects and physical designers build their 3D assets, right, that don't work in real time, especially not on like mobile, you know, stereoscopic devices, right? So there's some things we've done there that I feel like, you know, it having had that experience and not just having it all be real time gaming, right, type things is useful for the industry as a whole. So Yeah, I mean, is that, I just went around there, but does that make sense? Like, I have in my career, and some of the other people on my team, both Dark Arts and separate from Dark Arts, have done like immersive XR, you know, and AR projects that were not solely gaming, right? Yeah. Bridging the gap between enterprise, business, and design, and, you know, what it takes to make something real time and look real, you know, be illuminated properly and actually run at a reasonable, acceptable, you know, comfortable frame rate, things like that. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Just a diversified portfolio, as anybody who's investing has to follow. I think folks in the XR industry also have to kind of take a similar approach to have a little bit of lots of different offerings. So totally. Yeah, I guess as we start to wrap up, I'd love to hear what you think the ultimate potential of XR and extended realities might be and what they might be able to enable.
Yeah. I mean, I do think the smart glasses, right, eventually are the mobile phone, the biggest challenge to the mobile phone, right? Like, most people are comfortable wearing sunglasses. Once all the tech's there, right, it'd be nice to, you know, be walking down the street and have my glasses say, "Oh, hey, that's Kent," or like, "Where's the peanut butter?" Right, and it can help me find it. On the fully immersive side, right, I think of VR a lot as in AR, in like the modern day headsets, as there's a lot of potential for entertainment there. I do not ever think it will replace flat screen gaming, nor do I think it would be wise for people to attempt that, because they're different, right? There's a lot of types of experiences that extend from me as a real human coming out of my body that are only possible in VR and AR headsets. Right. So, for example, I don't think until you're fully jacked into the Matrix, which is a ways down the road, and all of your senses are being controlled in a simulated way, will I be able to really let you be in Call of Duty, right? Or Fortnite, where you're sliding across the floor and diving and doing rolls and can jump 15 feet in the air, right? Those kinds of things are really hard. So that's why I love seeing games like Beat Saber or Gorilla Tag or Supernatural, right? And Super Hot as well, right? Where they take advantage of what you as a person can do. I think because of the power of the modern headsets and where they're going, and that ability to focus on extending what you as a person can do, we will make a big dent in L&D training. I think also therapeutically, there's a lot that will happen there. And you know, the idea of just getting used to something in the context of how you would get used to it in real life, right, is something that YouTube and watching videos and reading tutorials and things can't do. So with Trip the Light, one of the things that we've noticed, for example, is that the physical closeness of your dance partner is something that we can offer you that we could never offer you, right, in any other kind of medium. So even if we had the best YouTube video in the world on how to learn salsa dancing, right, that physical closeness, what it's like to interact with a person that maybe you don't know, there's a, just like anything else, it takes practice to feel comfortable in that kind of environment. And, you know, XR is perfectly primed for that. I also think that the, you know, I'll kind of, I won't take forever, but so with respect to training and things like that, right, like I can put your hands into the kind of thing I'm teaching you how to do, and I can give you a sense of the pressure, and it's not a video screen, right? You can only do scale in VR properly. The other final thing I think that XR requires that is happening, and I think the industry has recognized it, is the ML, the machine learning and AI boom that's starting. I've always thought that XR experiences, because of the super immersive, you don't feel like you're looking through, you feel like you're in, even if it's AR where things are being projected in the real world, especially with, you know, interacting with other entities, the amount of interaction that's required to not feel like you're interacting with a sort of like animatronic Disney robot plus plus is so much higher, right? So, you know, if I'm playing any video game where I'm controlling with a controller or a mouse and keyboard, and it's, you know, it's a first person or even third person experience, I'm still limited to those inputs that I've got. Can I duck? Can I jump? Can I kick? Can I punch? Can I touch? You know, in VR, you can do anything you want. In AR, you can do anything you want. So the subset of interactions to make it feel believable explodes, right? So, you know, I don't think from a cost perspective, you know, being able to, you know, sneak up behind a character in a way that you couldn't in a console game or a PC game because you're locked into those inputs, you know, is something they're not thinking about doing that, of course. That interaction doesn't need to be dealt with. But if you want it to not feel like just a fancier animatronic robot that's in, you really need to spend a lot more energy to build out, right, those interactions. And XR and AI is the solution that I think needs to happen, right? And then again, on the other side of it with AR glasses, really for them to become useful day to day, right, in any environment, it has to just be a constant feed of what is the data that's going into these cameras, right? What is happening, right? Being trained so that the glasses could be contextually aware. So it's both in the real world and in, you know, immersive experiences. I think we have to grow it with AI and machine learning, or we risk it feeling like it doesn't do enough, or you're waiting for a patch. Right. It doesn't work when I'm outside. It doesn't work when I'm here. It doesn't work when I'm there. Really just has to just be constantly eating the data in order to understand the context of where it is.
Nice. And is there anything else that's left unsaid that you'd like to say to the broader immersive community?
Just, you know, don't be discouraged. I know it's always a roller coaster. And it really just, we just really look forward to continuing. And we hope that everybody else that's out there doing this, you know, doesn't lose heart if it feels like things are down. And, you know, just, I think it's extremely valuable to see that industry as a whole is adopting this technology for all kinds of things. I think that is very validating. I could also help with the capital that's necessary, whether or not you're interested in gaming or something else or XR in general, or just because it's a burgeoning business. I think it's a good sign personally.
Awesome. Well, Patrick, thanks so much for joining me and sharing a bit of your journey into XR and, you know, all the deep reasons why you're still really passionate and believe in it and have such a strong conviction to push forward on your kind of dance training and a game, the Trip to Light. I had a chance to play it and really enjoyed the kind of embodied interactions. And I can see that, you know, it's certainly kind of a lot of novel interactions as we start to think about the things that you could only do in VR. This is not a type of experience you could play on a 2D screen. And so, yeah, and also just that it's a really transitional liminal time for everybody in the industry. And so it's just really interesting to hear all the different things you've got, different irons in the fire of things that you're looking at. And LBE in particular is one that I think, you know, with Xcurio and other folks that are in Interstellar Arc and Sandbox and all these, you know, kind of vectors where in the industry there seems to be more excitement to people wanting to get off the internet and be embodied and have these visceral experiences, and sometimes not alone, but with other people as well. So these kind of shared social experiences, I think, are really on the rise. So yeah, thanks so much for joining me and sharing all your deep insights into your journey into XR and where you see it's at right now. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Kent. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Voices of VR podcast and for keeping the faith for where this industry is going here in the future. I feel like this is a kind of weird time for everybody in the industry. And if you believe in where this technology may go and that it may be able to bring about positive social change and transformation in the world, then please do consider supporting me here at the Voices of VR podcast, trying to navigate these dimensions of transformation and positive change for where all this might be going. So if you enjoy the coverage that I'm doing here, then please do consider becoming a member at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.